From the Findlay Toyota Studio, it's Cofield and Company.
We ain't really worried about what the people say. We just gonna keep going.
Can't do it. Gotta leave, man. It's the only hope.
And they're the reason I can't talk.
Little man, bye, little man.
It's time for Cofield and Company with Steve Cofield on ESPN Las Vegas.
All right, here we go on this Monday, National Championship Monday, as Clemson, LSU going to be up here at 5 o'clock on ESPN Las Vegas. Adam Candy's here. It's Steve Cofield. Ari steering the ship. Let's do it.
It's time for the three. Presented by Dustin DeHart at Nova Home Loans. Call him today at 577-2600.
Mostly football talk, although we do have to discuss the disaster that is Major League Baseball right now. Out of the gates, little breaking news from earlier today. UNLV football slowly filling out the final parts of the coaching staff under Marcus Arroyo. Coordinators are important, are they not? So they it looks like, well, it'll be officially announced soon, we think, by UNLV, but multiple folks reporting that the defensive coordinator will be a dude named Peter Hansen, inside linebackers coach from Stanford. Some experience with the Niners as well, so we'll get more information on the new DC when it comes down the pike for the UNLV football program. You know, it's funny. I just saw someone on Twitter say, another sports talk host outside of this market said, easiest day ever in Houston sports talk history. These are the kind of days, if you're in a city like Houston where you're kind of bombarded by multiple gigantic stories, I would actually hate to do a show on those days because there's almost too much to parse through. And if you don't know what's going on, the Texans meltdown alone is a week's worth of radio. The Texans future, Bill O'Brien, that's days and days and days of radio. And then they got hit today with the Astros, which is one of the more staggering penalties in the history of sports for an organization. It's pretty amazing how this thing has unfolded. Now, we don't do a lot of baseball, Candy, in the offseason, because I've come to the belief over the years that baseball just has a small, small niche role in sports talk during the offseason, unless you're in one of those cities where you know you have a team and you can talk about the offseason. But football is king. Football rules. So we barely discuss the front end of this whole Astros cheating scandal. So maybe I'm a little stunned by the penalty because we didn't talk about it a whole lot. Is the penalty stunning? Is this about what you expected? First of all, tell people what happened today to the Astros.
Here's the short version of what happened with baseball and why you should care, even though this is the offseason. Because this is about the World Series, which for a lot of baseball fans is the only time they do care. 2017, the Houston Astros were found guilty of using electronic equipment to steal signs from the catcher. So basically, they got a camera out in center field. They're decoding the signs, but it's not quite that simple. They go a step beyond that. They have a trash can right next to the dugout, and they bang the trash can once for one type of pitch, twice for a different type of pitch, three times for a third type of pitch, and the batter at the plate can hear the trash can getting hit. They know what pitch is coming because they're using this complicated system to figure it out from the catcher to the guy in the dugout out to the guy hitting the ball. They win the World Series in 2017. Then the Red Sox win the World Series in 2018. Oh, what's the common thread there, Steve? I mean, is there anything that ties those two
Alex
together?
Alex Cora was on the Astro staff.
And there
so
you
did
go.
He bring the system over to the Red Sox? Yes, it sounds like he did. What about Astros fans? And all these cheating scandals, you'll get locals, fans of those teams who are like, everyone does it. How is this any different than just the runner on second stealing signs? Well, one, you have to have a runner on second. In this case, you didn't have to have a runner on second. But you mentioned some of the next level where they were using the video room. There's also the interesting part of this where A.J. Hinch, the manager, didn't like it. I think broke a couple of monitors in protest over it, but he never put an official stop to it, so he played along. And the team, the organization, the players all benefited from it.
And as we'll discuss, A.J. Hinch certainly, if he was upset, had an interesting way of showing it when he was asked by the media, because
that's amazing.
He went full denial. He went into that turtle shell, man.
He went, as so many sports personalities do to the offense. Like, how dare you ask me these questions? But bottom line is, they've been caught cheating. They've been prosecuted. Hinch was suspended for a year. Lunau, the GM, was suspended for a year. They get a $5 million fine as an organization. They lost multiple first and second round picks for the next two drafts. And then within an hour of that, what happened to Hinch and the GM?
Gone. And gone.
Fired by?
Jim Crane, the owner, sent them both out. And Jim Crane was found, we'll say, guiltless by the MLB investigation. Of course, when it comes down from the commissioner's office and you are one of the 30-plus bosses of the commissioner, it's pretty easy to say you're not going to be found guilty in the report. But this isn't the end of it either, Steve, because those two were fired. They likely become persona non grata in baseball. But Alex Cora, who we just mentioned, is still waiting for his discipline because those 2018 Red Sox were his team. Alex Cora might get at least a year. He might get more when you see that he had hands in the last two World Series championships before this year being tainted by this electronic sign stealing, which goes way above and beyond the usual guy on second peeking in at the sign.
What do you think he gets?
I think 2 years is a likely punishment, because if you say he's involved in two of them, then I think he gets two. You have baseball purists out there, the true believers, who are saying this should have been a lifetime ban. When we're looking at a ban for Hinch of a year, that is the longest ban for a manager since Pete Rose got the ban hammer for life. So it was already a significant punishment. I think it could be worse for Cora.
Wow. Related? What about anyone else associated with the Astros who's working elsewhere? I just saw, was it a member of the Orioles who just got suspended as well, got announced?
Well, the one that jumped out to me was with the Mets, because Carlos Beltran, who... Now, here's the deal. It wasn't obviously just the GM and the manager. The coaches and the players were involved in all this, but Major League Baseball decided to play this a little smart. The managers don't have a union, and the GMs don't have a union. The players have a union, so they didn't come after the players and have to deal with grievances and arbitration and things that keep this in the news forever. They went after the guys who were at the top so they could get rid of them quickly. But Carlos Beltran was one of the players for the Astros who was described as one of the ringleaders of this whole situation, and he's now the manager of the New York Mets. So is he going to be let go? Is he going to be let off the hook? Because there are a lot of guys who could still catch a lot of flack for this. And you know what? Part of the problem here, Steve, is that the Houston Astros have been held up as this paragon of new thinking. All the analytics, and we know better than you. We tore the whole thing down to build it back up, and they were very, very public about their smugness. And so people are now very happy to see them getting smacked around after they flaunted it in everyone's faces how they knew how to do it differently and better. If you're going to have that kind of attitude on the way up, you better be unimpeachable in case you're hit on the way down.
And they pulled out the anti-Yankee card, which I think is interesting, because that was part of, you know, Hinch intentionally mentioned the Yankees as a team that snitched on them. And everyone just bought it, you know, as, oh, they're being jerks. Yankees, screw them. But baseball has looked through it now, and you've got a bunch of guilty parties, typical Mets, right? The Beltran choice was weird to begin with, and now they're probably going to have to fire him. And as I mentioned, so far, the GM for the Orioles, there's no info that he was involved, but if you're there... So there are people in Baltimore who are saying, did this guy cheat his way to a GM gig? So it's a black eye for baseball. I'm sure there's going to be a lot of folks out there who refuse to read the story, aren't going to think it's a big deal. But it looks like the 2017 and 18 World Championships are tainted. It's one of the I'll say it's one of the darkest days in baseball history. And I wonder if there's any discussion behind the scenes, as you just said, to go after some of the players. They all clearly benefited from it. They were all willing, or many were willing, to participate in this system. So I'm not saying the Astros should be forced to trade some of the players, but none of the players get dinged because of the potential fight the MLBPA?
You know who's going to get dinged? There's one player out of this whole thing who's going to get dinged, and it's garbage, and it's going to happen.
It's
going to be Mike Fiers, because he was the pitcher from the Astros who called this whole thing out at the beginning of the postseason. You know, in the way baseball culture works, this is the guy who is going to become the real pariah.
This is insane. Did you think the money penalty was weak, too?
I didn't mind the $5 million because what's, in baseball terms, what's $5 million? The real penalty here, go beyond Hinch. Go beyond Lunau, because you know what? In the end, these aren't the guys who make it run. The real penalty is the draft picks, because if Houston wants to hold themselves up and say, we did it through the draft, Altuve and Correa and Springer, we tanked to get these top picks, guess what they just lost? Two first-round picks and two second-round picks, which in baseball terms could be the difference in years of rebuilding.
I think the money penalty should be massive, because for Jim Crane, who's a billionaire, $5 million is nothing. Why not go after the Astros, and if they prove the Red Sox benefited too, why not take away all of their stadium playoff revenue for that given year? How playoffs about through the World Series. Everything you made, from concessions to parking to, most importantly, ticket prices, that's the fine.
You know what?
And I don't know how many tens of millions these teams make during the playoffs.
For every day the gate is open, you know what they're making when it costs $15 to buy a beer. I mean, I'm not trying to be right? Joe Q public
like
on
that
this,
would
but
be a penalty
obvious,
all of a sudden,
right?
If you're like, we're fining the Astros $48 million.
You know what they really should do? Let's just call it what it is. We should have no World Series champion for 2017 or 18. Vacate
Ooh.
It. Just vacate it. Don't give it to the Dodgers. The Dodgers didn't win on the field. But why should we have a Barry Bonds kind of situation here when we know the record is tainted? When we know that Barry Bonds and his size 8 head were cheating? Don't let the cheaters get to keep their names on the trophy.
Part two of H-Town Sports Talk here in Vegas on the way. That was a freaking disaster yesterday. But I bet you there's a lot of people were watching, because I know I was thinking it. When the Texans went up so big, there had to be a lot of people out there who were like, can Bill O'Brien finish this? He couldn't, and I'm not sure that he's going to be back next year.
The Three is brought to you by Dustin DeHart at Nova Home Loans. Call today at 577-2600 to receive a $500 coupon towards your appraisal or any purchase or refinance. Dial up Dustin now. 577-2600. Now, back to Cofield and Company in the Findlay Toyota Studio.
Rolling on here on a Monday, Championship Football Monday. Clemson and LSU are playing for the national title. Texans. We should have been talking about the Texans today. We should have been talking about two monumental upsets in the AFC. Right? Ravens spit the bit. Just get physically mauled. And for a quarter and a quarter? Quarter and a quarter of a quarter? The Texans were just crushing the Chiefs. It's 24-0. Candy, what the hell happened?
The fluky stuff stopped happening. That's it. Really. I mean,
there were a bunch of turnovers that led to the big lead.
I mean, look, you're looking at a blocked punt and a muff punt leading to most of the points for Houston. And so when you hand them short fields and you let them build the huge lead, sure, it's not all that surprising. But Bill O'Brien, man. I mean,
Specifically on O'Brien, because I know he's the easy punching bag. Most people think the guy underachieves year to year. So the narrative is there going in. What did he do that blew it for the Texans?
Do you think, because I do not, that Bill O'Brien was aggressive in that game? I don't think Bill O'Brien called that game aggressively. I don't think he let Deshaun Watson try to win that game as much as he needed to. And I think it's obvious. You get up 24-0. Are you going to take your foot off the gas? Naturally, yeah. The thought is, I got a 3-touchdown, 3-2-point conversion lead. Let's play some prevent defense. And against anybody but a healthy Chiefs offense, maybe that gets by. But you have to know, if you're Bill O'Brien, just how bad your defense is. And the Houston Texans defense has been awful. Absolutely awful. They let Josh Allen walk down the field on the first possession last weekend. Walk down the field. Their corners have been horrendous. You knew going in that the biggest mismatch in the game you had was the Kansas City wide receivers versus the Houston secondary, so you can't stop putting your foot on the gas. I thought he called the game conservatively, and I thought he gave the Chiefs a chance to get back into it.
Kansas City's touchdowns to get back into it and take the lead before the half. Two plays, three plays, three plays, and then the last one before the half was a longer drive of eight plays, but it took seven plays to get 21 points on the board. So you've got a game plan for the fact that your defense is beat up and not very good. And he didn't, and Is it easy to go back and kill him at 21-0? Because we all know what happened. But he kicked a field goal. He had a 4th-and-1. He's at, what, the 15 or 14-yard line. 4th-and-1. The Chiefs are reeling. You go for it there? Is that new age thinking?
Without question.
Okay.
The analytics will tell you you have to go in that situation. Because, think about it, you don't change the situation for Kansas City at all. All you do is make it so that they have to go for two-point conversions instead of kicking extra points. That's it. But if you go for a touchdown and you make them get in the end zone 4 times, that's a much different story. Although, it didn't end up working out that way because they managed to get outscored 51-7 from that point on.
And that should always be calculated when you're deciding on what to do with a field goal. Does it actually improve your position? And in that case, going from 21-24 changes nothing. I mean, they have to make their two-point conversions, but it's still a 3-touchdown gap. What about the fake punt? That's what people were blown away by. They're like, wait, you're not aggressive on a 4th-and-1. You didn't drop the hammer. You didn't step on the throat, but then you're going for a crazy fake punt. Which, by the way, the fake punt and fake kick in general are discussions to be had about new age thinking. Because I've heard a lot of people say, if you're going for it, then go for it. Why would you put a weaker unit out there or a weaker set of players to execute the fake? Just freaking go for it. What, the surprise factor is that big?
It makes no sense to me when you look at how we've evolved in thinking about football. And I know people love to bang on the computer nerds with analytics. You're not talking about analytics telling you to get rid of conventional wisdom. You're looking at things that say, here are numbers and facts and background that say your chance of winning get X percent better if you go for it in this situation. And a situation like Bill O'Brien faced with the 4th-and-1 down deep in Kansas City territory with a chance to just put the foot straight down on the Adam's apple of the Chiefs, that is one that analytics will tell you, go for it. But Steve, you were 100% correct. Just put your best unit on the field and go get the yards. That's it.
Is he a good coach? He's winning divisions in a division that has generally been pretty balanced, hasn't had superpowers, is winning the division every year enough, especially as you've got a maturing Deshaun Watson?
You can't look at Bill O'Brien through the lens of, is he just a good coach? You have to look at Bill O'Brien through the lens of, is he a good coach and GM?
Which is amazing because I think the news came out a little while ago. At least O'Brien said he doesn't know what their plans are for a GM. So is he good enough to be a coach and a GM?
Absolutely not. So here's the look at what Houston has coming to it next year. No first-round pick. They have their own second, which will be down well into the 50s. And then you're looking at potentially a couple of thirds as comp picks. So remember, you traded your number one pick to Miami to get Laremy Tunsil to play left tackle for a team that had no offensive line whatsoever. So Bill O'Brien can be looked at as a good coach if you say, oh, well, he's winning. Well, yeah, because he's coach and GM, and he's mortgaging everything down the line in the future to get just good enough to win 9 or 10 games now, which if you look at the talent on the field, they should be winning more than 9 or 10 games, although I will give you that the J.J. Watt injury changed everything for them midseason on defense.
That said, as an organization, you probably should be prepped at this point for J.J. Watt to be a part-time player. Can we really count on him to make it a whole season with all the injuries he's had?
I don't know that you can. And I think you also have to look at the fact that the Javion Clowney situation deteriorated as quickly as it did, and you got stuck trading your most dynamic pass rusher before week one.
Also, why it's not easy for coaches to be GMs, because the GM has to be a voice of reason at times. Hell, it's not easy for Gruden. I mean, I think they did a pretty good job this year, but, you know, that book is still being written. Ultimately, he's the decision maker. He's got the final call. And we talked about it a lot with Antonio Brown, right? How many times do we reference, hey, good cop, bad cop? Who's going to set the rules here? Gruden is the GM, but he's also got to be the guy who's tight with AB, so he's got to massage that situation. It ain't easy. I think Belichick has mastered it, although even Belichick had some personnel issues this year, didn't make the right calls on getting Tom Brady weapons. But it's not easy, and I don't know. I'm fascinated by the Texan situation because do you fire a coach who's 9-7, 10-6 every year, makes the playoffs every year but can't get you over the hump? And he got a win this time around, but, you know, they had a big lead. And I guess to be fair, they were 9.5, 10-point underdogs, so it wasn't an expected victory, but You wonder if there's a point where they either need some fresh blood at head coach or he needs some fresh blood around him.
The Houston Texans have the single most valuable asset in all of professional sports. They have a potential MVP-level quarterback on a rookie contract.
Yep.
If you blow
it's
that...
out. It's running
if
out.
If you blow that...
Yep.
You're done. You don't luck into them. Look around the league at how many teams are trying to get by on less than stellar quarterback play. Look at how we argue over whether Derek Carr should stay because Derek Carr is an above average quarterback. Wow. He's not elite. He's not MVP level, and he's never going to be. But are you going to get better? Can you find better than him this offseason? No, you can't. And if you're in the situation they are with Deshaun Watson and having one of the two best wide receivers in the league in DeAndre Hopkins, you can't squander this. And O'Brien might not be a bad coach, but tell me what other coach, if you handed them the talent that he has, is not going to get to 9 wins, is not going to win in a division that was basically handed to you this year. What was the challenge in that division? The Colts with Jacoby Brissett? The Jaguars with the Minshew mustache? Come on. Come on. And yes, Tennessee has proven to be a very good team down the stretch, largely because they chose to put Ryan Tannehill in at quarterback when it was Marcus Mariota. It was a much different story.
Watson has one more year on this first contract. Next year, the cap hit is for about $4 million. Then what happens?
He'll go 50-year option, and you'll get him for one more year at a reasonable price, but then that's
it. Will they? Because it seems like when a lot of teams negotiate the contract, that fifth year becomes expensive. It's not going to go right to $33 million, but
yeah.
Honeymoon's over, man, in terms of salary cap and roster flexibility, Bill.
Look, the Texans have one more shot at this, and Deshaun Watson is the only way they get there. You have to let this year go. As bad as 24-0 is, you've got to let this year go and take a sober look at this franchise and say, Deshaun Watson has the ability to be the franchise quarterback. DeAndre Hopkins has the ability to be the best receiver in the NFL. You still have a healthy-ish J.J. Watt that you can count on for, let's say, 3/4 of a year at the least, and look what he did in the game against Buffalo just a week ago. Get it done now. Get it done with a new head coach who can maximize the talent you have, or else look forward to another decade of mediocre.
ESPN Las Vegas.
Hey, Raiders on 3. 1, 2, 3.
Raiders.
Home of the Raiders fan. You're listening to Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
All right, let's get into the preview of this title game tonight. Also, look back on what happened in the playoffs. The former Notre Dame player and then a longtime NFL player with teams like the Titans, the Chiefs, the Eagles, the Cowboys. Rocky Boyman is on the horn with Steve and Adam here in Vegas. How are you, sir?
Fellas, good evening. How are you?
Good, man. We're fired up for this game. We'll get to that in about 5 minutes, but also stoked about what we saw over the weekend. We were just talking about Bill O'Brien and the Texans. As a former player, does it bother you that a lot of us come on and we're just annihilating Bill O'Brien as if the whole thing was his fault yesterday in terms of the collapse?
It's funny. On my own radio show today, I proposed the question, did Bill O'Brien get one single wink of sleep last night? I mean, how could he, right? To be up 24 points and then have the other team go on a 41-point run like that, I think the answer to your question, is it fair? No. Is that reality? Yes. It's tough when, you know, you're the head man and everything kind of rolls downhill from you. And I think people look to some of the decisions. You know, he called the timeout. Does he go for it on 4th-and-1? He decides not to. And then obviously, the fake punt call there, which I wasn't as critical of, but nevertheless, it didn't work out for him. And, you know, a head coach's, main job is to weather the storms, right? And different things happen and you could be on the upside and things are going smoothly and all of a sudden very quickly in the game of football things can flip and the momentum goes the other way. You got to be that calming presence, the guy that figures things out and gets the team going ahead and back in the right direction. He did not do that and it was unfortunate for Houston.
Do they need to replace him with someone or just get him more help? You know, especially for situations like that one where there's indecision and you have to call a timeout, or do they just need to start over with someone new in that head coach position?
I don't think so. I still like him as a coach. I mean, you know, look, I mean, some of it too is, you know, offensively, their offense was lacking a lot of the year. A lot of their offense was, hey, Deshaun, man, go make a play, right? You know, so, you know, even in that game, there were some instances, I think, that if maybe there's a little more help around him, maybe that's, you know, maybe a little more youth on defense and things like that, then maybe could help him out. I don't care, ego or not, I think any coach should be open to the concept of having some help, whether that's a lot of coaches have help with, you know, analytics and, you know, kind of when do you go for it on third down, when do you go for it on fourth down, that sort of thing. So if he feels he needs help from a game management standpoint, then I'll be it. But I don't think the reaction even today just after that game is fire the head coach and move on. I still think he's a pretty good coach.
So Chiefs avoid the upset. The other top team by the seeds, Ravens can't do so. Isolated bad spot for the Ravens, or did Vrabel find something that was an Achilles heel with this Baltimore team?
I think one of my initial reactions was, I'll never forget, so for the bowl game this year for ESPN, I had the Belk Bowl, which is Virginia Tech in Kentucky. And Justin Fuente, when we talked to him the day before the game, he kept saying, man, my biggest concern is with so much off time between our last game and the bowl game, what's our offense? The timing is going to be the thing that's critical of, are we going to have it or not? And, you know, side note, they did not have it in that game, especially through the first half. And I think something similar happened here. And look, I mean, other folks are talking about it, but with them being resting a lot of starters, seven starters in week 17 and having 19 days off, you could tell that the offense, you know, in a high-level game like that that requires so much precision, I just thought they looked a little bit off. And I can speak a little bit from experience, too. I was with the Colts in 2007. We were 13-3. We were the number two seed. We had a first-round bye and a first-round playoff game versus the Chargers with no LaDainian Tomlinson and no Phillip Rivers, right? I mean, come on. We should have just smashed that team and moved on. But you could tell early on the offense wasn't quite clicking. There was just a little bit of timing issues. So I don't know. It's such a tough thing, because do you play Lamar Jackson in week 17 against the Steelers in a meaningless game and somebody rolls up on his ankle and he can't play? You don't want to have that. I know that was always Bill Polian's concern when I played with them. So I don't know what the answer is. Maybe they can look into some analytics and maybe figure out historically what works best. Do you rest starters or do you not? But I just know from a player's perspective as well, it's oftentimes good to kind of just have that momentum and keep it going, because a lot of times your timing and certain nuances of the game can suffer.
Rocky, you've managed to work analytics in a few times here, which is music to my ears because I love talking about this kind of stuff. I'm curious, as we see teams like Tennessee that have been so reliant on the run the last few weeks with Derrick Henry shouldering the load, how do you feel about the evolution of analytics in terms of them trending toward the passing game and away from the running game? Not to say that the running attack can't have its place, but I think there have been some folks the last few days have seen, you know, say, see, take a look. You know, we still have these rushing teams doing well in the playoffs when, realistically, it still took a lot of things to break Tennessee's way against Baltimore to get the job done by largely relying on Derrick Henry.
No, it certainly does. And look, I mean, there's just a lot of factors that have come together very fortunately for the Titans. And look, they've built that team and they've assembled a great offensive line and Tanner Lewan and those guys, and also a once-in-a-generation type running back. So it's not easy for them to do what they're doing, and certainly, look, I mean, I still think you have to have a top-notch quarterback. Most of the time, that's what you have to have, a guy like Patrick Mahomes that can, you know, throw it around the park but also be able to pick up some yards with his legs, and Ryan Tannehill is kind of the anti that, and the Titans are the anti to that, kind of to your point. But I just think part of that, too, though, guys, is, you know, look, there's analytics and there's manalytics, right? You got to know when to use which, and I think one of the things that's at work here is with so many more offenses being passing offenses, and we're going to spread the field, and you see it in college, you see it in the pros. You're not used to seeing that style as much. You know, you're not practicing it. I mean, hell, in the NFL, you're not practicing against much anymore, especially, you know, doing things like run defense, you know, your 14 padded practices per season, that sort of thing. So now all of a sudden, you're facing an offense, you know, late in the season. You know, you're not doing a bunch of banging and hitting this time of the season. Now you're facing offense. You haven't seen much of that kind of style with the power and the zone running game and the offensive linemen working in unison the way the Titans' offensive line is. So it can be shocking to a team, and I think that's one of the things, one of the reasons we're seeing, you know, two really good upsets there by the Titans.
Rocky Boyman, ESPN college football analyst, joins us here talking about NFL divisional round weekend as well as tonight's national championship game in college football, LSU and Clemson. I don't know, Rocky. I mean, I feel like this is one of the most hotly anticipated versions of this game that we've ever had. Give us your quick breakdown on how LSU and Clemson shape up.
Well, first of all, let me just say this. I live here in Cincinnati. I'm born and bred in Cincinnati, so I am a, even though I didn't play for the Bengals, it's my hometown team, and so I'm a long-suffering Bengals fan. So there is hope in this town by the name of Joe Burrow, right? Everyone thinks that this is, including me, he's the savior. He's the one that's going to lead this franchise back. So it's funny, all the conversation in Cincinnati today is, man, we want him to win, but, I mean, can they get him out of the game in, like, the first quarter? Because we want him to get hurt, right? Because that would be a very Bengals thing to happen, is for, you know, the golden child to go down or something like that. Anyway, but that's, it's just kind of funny mention that here in Cincinnati, because as a Bengals fan, you expect the worst, and, you know, a lot of times the worst thing that could possibly happen does happen. But nevertheless, to your attention, onto the game, yeah, I mean, it's amazing just because, I mean, look, just out of the gate, you're going to have two quarterbacks that are most likely going to go number one overall in consecutive years, Burrow this year and Trevor Lawrence next year. And you got two teams that I think are very deep. You know, both teams that have recruited well and can put up points and have a lot of good players on them. So I just think, you know, there's so many different aspects this game could come down to. I think Travis Etienne, I think he's the X factor. I think he's a special player among special players, and the LSU's got to find a way to stop him. If they don't, I think he's the guy that could really be the factor in leading them to victory tonight.
So who's your pick?
I got LSU. I'm going LSU 38-34. I believe that's still the over. I think there's going to be some points scored in it. I just think that, I mean, everyone talks about LSU or Oklahoma's defense and how bad they were, and Joe Burrow beat up a bad defense. The defense was better than it had been in years past. You know, they got Alex Grinch, the defensive coordinator, and so they weren't a terrible. I mean, it's a Big 12 defense still, but they weren't terrible. And I still thought he was so special in that game. You're going through and you're looking for all the qualities you want, you know, in an NFL quarterback. Can he, you know, for me, the number one is, can he make quick decisions? Yes, he can do that. Quick decision making. Can he throw on the run? Can he throw the deep ball? Can he throw accurate? Can he pick up yards with his legs? The answer to all that is yes. Now, the answer is all that is yes for Trevor Lawrence as well. But I just think the offense for LSU is too explosive, and I think Joe Burrow is going to have a hell of a night tonight.
Yeah, Dabo Swinney, last 11 bowl games, is 9-2 outright. He's 10-1 against the spread. Is there a way you could describe for us why certain coaches are good bowl game coaches, good CFP coaches?
It's hard. I think it kind of goes back to what I was mentioning at the beginning there. It's just, you've got to be a master of how to learn, you know, the ebbs and flows of the season, and also the time layoff and a couple weeks between the games, and how do you manage that? How do you practice guys? How do you, you know, I got to give it to college coaches just for, you know, having to. I think it's the hardest job out there, because you're trying to get inside the minds of, you know, 19, 20, 21-year-old kids who are, you know, are so emotional, and there's lots of things that are happening in their lives. And, you know, I think for that reason alone, and I know Clemson did not play the toughest schedule this season, and I think they need to address that, but to go undefeated in two straight seasons and to be able to get college kids up for games and find them ways to keep their head in games as their minds are on school and all kinds of other things that are out there, to be able to do that takes a special head coach, and I don't know the reasons why, but Dabo Swinney has that it, whatever that it thing is, and he does a hell of a job.
That's Rocky Boyman. He played at Notre Dame, played in the NFL. He's doing radio now on Powerhouse Station WLW. Are you doing sports talk and news talk, or what are you doing now on that show?
No, it's a drive time show from 3 to 6. It's a little bit of everything.
Wow.
We do some serious, some light, some current events, local stuff, political stuff, sports, you name it, and it's just kind of a good, fun, entertaining, informative show.
Pretty cool. One last question.
Yeah.
We have a weird connection with Mick Cronin because I feel like UNLV got used for some leverage. Do you guys miss Mick Cronin in Cincinnati? I mean, he was a local guy, and then he finally bailed to go to UCLA. Do they miss him there?
Yeah, they do. Look, Coach Brand is doing a good job here with Cincinnati. I just don't think they have quite the players that they need from a recruiting standpoint right now. But, no, Mick was – very much loved in this town. I mean, he was kind of a no-nonsense guy. But, I mean, from a just a soundbite standpoint, he was hilarious. He always had that just kind of gruff, like, we're terrible, but he kind of would say it in a funny way and, all that kind of stuff. So the town really loved Mick. And I know when they got bounced from the tournament, what was that, a couple of years ago, early on in the first round there, that was kind of a black mark on him a little bit. But still, by and large, guys, Mick Cronin is very well liked and very well respected. I like Mick a lot. I think he's the best, and I hope he has a lot of good luck out there.
Yeah, you think it's going to work in L.A.?
It's tough. I mean, you would have thought Chip Kelly would have much more success, yeah, much sooner than he did out at UCLA. I don't know. I think it's kind of a funky town, a funky kind of university. I don't know what motivates. It's hard to know what motivates kids these days, and being out there in L.A. and the warm weather and all that, it seems like it should work easier than it does. I have confidence in Mick that he can get it done.
Rocky, enjoy the game tonight. Thanks so much.
Thanks so much, guys. Appreciate it.
There you go. Rocky Boyman, who played linebacker at Notre Dame, went on to play 8 years in the National Football League. His pick is LSU close. It means Clemson covers and the game goes over. We'll have our picks as the show moves along, but we do have to check back in on the Golden Knights. My God, what the hell happened at the end of that homestand? Sideline Stormy will be calling in as they hit the road from Buffalo.
Visit Cofield's Corner on LVSportsNetwork.com for access to the latest podcasts and best interviews. Now, back to Cofield and Company in the Findlay Toyota Studio.
Get into the Golden Knights. That was not a great way to close the homestand. Sideline Stormy had to withstand all of that. Now she's on the road. She gets the reward of going to Buffalo. Stormy, how are you?
I'm great. Better now that I'm talking to you. How are you doing?
There you go. I like that. I like that. So I assume you're in Buffalo, right? You don't travel last minute?
Correct. Yes, we got in here yesterday.
Okay. So far, what's it like?
I always complain about the weather, but it's not that cold. It's cold, but not that cold. It's been nice. The team had a really good practice today, and yeah, everybody just kind of hanging out tonight, getting ready for the game tomorrow.
Stormy, from your vantage point, what happened from the beginning of the homestand to the end of the homestand? I mean, clearly this was a different team at both ends.
Yeah, I think that, and Gerard Gallant has touched on it a lot, the homestand was really long, seven games at home can be long for the team, long for the fans to keep going to all of those games in such a short amount of time. But, they really were playing some super dominant hockey at the beginning of that homestand. And then slowly, you hit game four and it starts to flip that switch a little bit. And each of the starts started to get a little bit worse. And it's something that, they have said multiple times over these past few, days and games that the starts haven't been good enough, and it's something they need to do, but nobody can really pinpoint a rhyme or reason as to why they've been the way that they have. So just, trying to flip the switch, get back to, the game that they want to play, and hoping that heading onto the road can kind of make that happen, give a little change of scenery, give everybody a little spark and opportunity to focus on hockey and hockey alone.
Stormy, maybe you can just go into that a little bit more, because we've talked plenty about the home ice advantage that the crowds in Vegas tend to give this team and how well the Golden Knights have played at T-Mobile Arena. So if I'm a fan and I'm thinking to myself, wait a minute, why would they want to get away from home? What do you think is the feeling around the team about that?
No, it's not that they want to get away. Trust me, they love playing at T-Mobile Arena. It is a bumping atmosphere every time they go. I think that for hockey players, you know, you think when you're at home for a long period of time or when you're on the road for a long period of time that you get into a rhythm, right? Like, that's what I would think. But for hockey players, their rhythm is kind of being out of one. Is, you know, a couple games at home, a couple games on the road, a game here, a game there. That's what they're used to. That's what their norm is. And when you're at home for an extended period of time, they're not really getting that normalcy for them. They're not getting the one-on-one time with their teammates that help, you know, bring the morale and bring those different things along with them when you're stagnant in one place the whole time. So it's nothing against the Golden Knights fans. It's nothing against T-Mobile Arena, of course, but, you know, their normal is kind of different than what you would normally expect.
Well, Stormy, if normal involves being on the road, there's a lot of normal on the way for the Golden Knights. If you factor in the All-Star break, Golden Knights will not play a home game until February 8th. How do they feel about all that time on the road?
Well, we talked to Paul Stastny about that today in the dressing room after practice, and, you know, they're not thinking of it as, we're not playing our next home game until mid-February. They're thinking of it as, you know, we have four games here on the road right now, playing, you know, a game almost every other day. Back home for a little while, an opportunity to reset, be around family, relax, refresh, and then head back out on the road again for another four games. And they're kind of thinking about it in those small chunks versus, oh my gosh, we're never going to play a home game again. Just, you know, take it small chunks at a time to get where they want to be.
Cofield and Company. Stormy Bonantoni's on the horn with us on Mondays as we check in weekly to find out what's going on with the Golden Knights. I want to go back to the homestand for a second. You were there. You heard the reaction to some of the poor play. Booing! And there was quite the debate on radio and social media about booing. Thorny topic here. Very touchy subject, Stormy. Where do you fall on fans booing their own team?
I don't do it. I don't like it. I don't like when that happens. I don't think that you should boo your own team. That's never been my thing personally. So come on, guys, don't, no more of that in the future. If you want the team to show up for you every night, you got to keep showing up for them every night, right?
I don't boo my own team. Candy, are you a booer?
I've done it, but very, very rarely, and mostly around lack of effort, not lack of performance.
Okay, that said, Stormy, I'm fine with fans booing. If they want to boo, they paid for the ticket, they can boo.
No!
Yes.
It's wrong.
Yes.
I don't like it.
They can do it. Well, if there's one guy from the Golden Knights who would like to have a talk with some of the fans booing, it's probably Jonathan Marchessault. He's that kind of guy. He's a fiery guy. Fiery little guy, right?
Yes.
Where are we now on Marchessault? Because it seems like it's been a common theme from some of the players saying, hey, you know, there's just certain things he does. We need him back on the ice.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I think almost everyone that I've talked to has said that, you know, they miss his energy in the room, on the bus, on the ice, of course. So it's nice to see that he, you know, he said today that he's really close. He practiced on the top line with William Karlsson and Riley Smith today. You know, coach played it, you know, close to the vest, saying that we'll find out everything tomorrow. But he seems like he's ready to play, and he really, really wants to be out there. He was telling us earlier just, you know, you can't come back at 70 or 80%, and he's been wanting to come back since the first day, you know, that he didn't play, and he really wants to be there for the team. He missed being around the guys. That's when, you know, these players, that's when they have the most fun. That's when they build the camaraderie, is when they're all together. And he said that even when he's trying to just, you know, be around them in passing, because, you know, on game days, that's what's tough, is you're not with everybody. But anytime he sees anyone, he's trying to be a positive attitude, trying to smile, keep it light, keep everybody happy, because he can't be out there in those moments like he normally would be. So I know that we're all really excited and, you know, waiting on pins and needles to see when he will come back and play. One guy obviously isn't going to make the full difference for the team when it's struggling, but sometimes all you need is a spark, and hopefully Jonathan Marchessault can be that spark.
Part of these 20 days away from home also includes the All-Star break, and then a break for the Knights after that. We got an update on the All-Star weekend. Max Pacioretty is in. What happened?
So cool. You know, I was tweeting like crazy trying to get everybody to vote for him as a last man in candidate, but then when another player gets excused for the potential birth of his child, Max Pacioretty got the nod. I think that he should have gotten in just in the first place. He's, you know, got 45 points in 48 games and just playing outstanding. It's I'm so excited for him. He's so humble, you know. He's more excited that his family gets to be a part of it than for himself. But it's just a really, really cool accolade. Everybody on the team is so happy for him. He's so well deserving. I don't think anybody even realized that he hadn't had an All-Star recognition before. They were kind of shocked that this is the first time, but super exciting for him, and it'll be a great time in St. Louis for him and his wife and four sons.
Now, if I recall correctly, last week you were miffed that Fleury was going to get...
What?
No, you were, yeah. That Fleury was going to get dinged with a game before or after the All-Star weekend. So here's another one. I'll throw you on the griddle. I think, however you say his name, Silverberg from the Ducks should also have to miss a game. I don't care that he has a kid on the way. Come on now. Let's go.
Oh,
reward the fans.
Come on. If you got to think about, like, Tomasz Nosek, when his son was born, he missed the game because his son was born. Like, that could be the case in general anyways. So I don't think you should ding him again.
All right. Well, I'm trying to stand up for Fleury in this case, but they are different cases. Hey, real quick, before we go out, do you guys have up on AT&T Sportsnet a chance for fans to win a autographed jersey?
We do. Oh, look at you. You're checking out my social media. Good on you. Yes, fans can win a Shea Theodore signed jersey, and all you have to do is go follow AT&T Sportsnet Rocky Mountain West. So it's RMW, AT&T Sportsnet, RMW. Tweet at them with the hashtag that they require and retweet it to share. So if you guys want a Shea Theodore autographed sweater, and I know that everybody does out there, make sure that you do it. AT&T Sportsnet will hook you up.
Did you get some chicken wings last night?
I didn't. I got chicken fingers last night, and everybody was making fun of me. Wow. Because we're in Buffalo and I didn't get chicken wings. But that legitimately, as soon as I hang up the phone, that's where I'm going downstairs, is to get Buffalo wings in Buffalo.
Perfect. All right, Stormy, enjoy the trip.
Thank you. Bye.
There you go. Stormy Bonnet, TNT Sportsnet. And as she said, go to Twitter account AT&T Sportsnet RMW, and you get a chance, pretty easy, to win a Shea Theodore autographed jersey.
The crew over at Finley Toyota speak Spanish, Thai, and even Persian. In fact, they speak 14 different languages. Come in and talk the universal language of big savings today.